There's a lot of things in this old world that just do not make sense. Like why there's so few believers on the firing line, while so many others sit the fence. But if you want to know where the Word of God stands, and believe it wants to use your feet and hands, it's time to take your faith out of the seats and into the streets, and come along with me. If you only look, then you will see on WCN TV.
Hi, friends. Pastor Mike with you again here on WCN TV. Thank you for joining me today. If you have children and even grandchildren, you'll want to text somebody right now. If they have children and grandchildren, say, hey, listen, tune in WCN TV, WCNTV.net. You don't want to miss this conversation. Or they can catch it in the archives, but it's much better live. We're going to talk about what's really causing my kids' bad behavior. Now, I'll tell you, at this age, and I was telling, well, let me just welcome Jeff to the show. Jeff, thank you so much for joining me today.
It's great to be here with you, Dr. Mike.
It is wonderful. And it's just Mike. We can drop that, all the rest of that stuff.
Sounds good.
I mentioned to you before we went on the air that my baby is 37 now. So it's like, well, but I've got grandbabies. I've got grandbabies that are 4 and 6. And a lot of what you wrote in this book really resonated with me. And I was discussing some of it with my wife, Kathy, today. And some of the things that were shocking in the book is this, for example, 3 in 5 adolescent girls, folks, 3 in 5 adolescent girls and 1 in 3 adolescent boys struggle with deep depression and sadness. Now, folks, there's something wrong in our, can I say, culture, but let's zero it down in. There's something wrong with the way that children are being reared, parents are parenting. There's something off there given this statistic. And so I guess, Jeff, before we get started and too far down this conversation, that's a shocking statistic. I imagine it was shocking to you when you came across it.
Well, because we do so much work with families and struggling kids, it actually wasn't that big a surprise to me when the CDC put the report out about 6-7 months ago, because we work with so many kids and, frankly, young adults and even adults that are encountering depression. And it was something I encountered back when I was in my early 30s. So, the sad state of things is that depression has exploded, cutting has exploded. Gender identity issues have exploded, and it's all coming from the negativity that is building up and being bottled up in our kids.
This book and others are the result of research that you've done over the years with over 3,000 students now, discovering their behavior or self-destructive behavior. And you really zeroed in that this self-destructive behavior comes from their very core beliefs that they may not even be aware of.
I can tell you, I wasn't aware of mine. When I encountered clinical depression and went to the one really good counselor I found, and unfortunately she died in the office of a heart attack with another client while I was still seeing her. You know, they identified I had negative core beliefs, and I'm like, what do you even mean? And helped me start digging into my unconscious. And what I found was I had about 12 deeply held negative core beliefs, like not good enough and unlovable, that were impacting me. And then when I began going out and helping parents, given the research we were doing, and the parents were coming to me after the parent seminars we did in churches, they'd be, help me with my kid. They've seen three counselors. They're not getting better. You understand what's going on with these kids way more than their counselor. Please help us. I'm like, I'm not a licensed counselor. I can't. And so eventually a board member had a problem with their kids and he said, you're going to help us. I'm like, I didn't have a choice. Right. And so I fly out and spend a week with them. And, you know, the first day their daughter is clinically depressed. She's attempted suicide by taking pills at a friend's house, was mad that she woke up. She had two suicide letters written, three plans. She was sexting, just a Christian family. She is sexting nudes to 50 guys. She had double hatch marks of cuts up and down her inner thighs. It was a complete and total wreck. And I knew her when she was 9 and she was amazing and totally fine. And by 13, she's far gone. And it was such a blessing over a 6-month period of the very first student I worked with, highly suicidal, to see her turn around and call me one day. And she was driving. This was a couple of years later, after we had done the initial work. Then she got her driver's license and wanted to do some more work. And she's like, she was driving down the road after the second segment of work we did. And she's like, Jeff, I stopped and smelled a flower and it was amazing. And I'm driving right now and I'm looking at the sky and the clouds and it's so beautiful. Has it always been this beautiful?
Wow.
And she's talking and talking and talking. And she's like, oh, darn. And I'm like, what? I missed my turn like probably 7 minutes ago. And I'm late for an appointment. And she had to turn around. It's like, okay, I'm going to let you go. But we deal with these kids that are encountering deep depression and color goes out of life. And they just want to escape into their phones. They want to do anything to avoid the feelings that they're having. And one of the things that we've seen help parents that have depressed kids is an analogy. The parents don't understand depression and they believe if they encourage them to get up and get going and just go try something, that it'll help their kids. It actually makes it worse because the kids know they used to be able to do this stuff and they're riding themselves so hard that when their parents point out what they're not doing and that they should just go try, it makes them even more negative. And the root cause, psychology doesn't understand why this is the case, but the root cause of depression, besides the serotonin imbalance, which is now questioned by a recent study in the UK, is being deeply unhappy or mad at yourself. Mm. And so what I help parents understand if they've got a depressed kid is this, that, you know, when you ask a depressed kid to do something, let's say you ask him to take a mop bucket with 2 gallons of water, right, that weighs 16 pounds and go water a plant in the backyard. It'll take them 3 minutes. It's not that hard. What the kid sees emotionally, because they're so emotionally depleted and their motivation and their negativity is so high, they see a 50-gallon drum of water.
Wow.
And they go, that's 400 gallons of water, and you want me to get that to the backyard by myself? There's no way I can do this. How could you even expect me to do that, mom and dad? This is unreasonable. And that's what is going on emotionally within them, that everything gets larger than life. And when we then put pressure on them, like it's not that big a deal, they don't feel heard. They don't feel understood. And so what we tell parents is we have to stop and validate that they're feeling this. And we have to help them dig into why they've gotten so negative about themselves.
Yes.
That's the linchpin to getting out of the depression.
Yes.
And so, you know, it's interesting though, what's frustrating as a parent is if the kid manages to get up and go and touch the bucket, all of a sudden it's magically back to 16 pounds and 2 gallons of water, and they do it without a problem. So it seems like they should be able to do it every time. And so with one really depressed girl we were working with that was incredibly negative about herself, when she was having a hard time getting up and going to school, which was a battle, and she missed a lot of days of school, I'm like, go in, wake her up, and then ask her, you know, if she's struggling, is this a hard morning for you? And if it is, then ask her what she needs to feel better about herself. And we identified three or four things. I identified with the girl three or four things that the mom could offer her. And it seemed so counterintuitive. One of it was a cup of tea. Another was a stuffed animal that meant a lot to her that she could hug. There were different things that the girl would request. And on the mornings that her mom did that, didn't apply pressure, she was able 15 minutes later to get out of bed and get to school. Because they've gotten so negative, they need to start to like themselves again, love themselves again, start to care about their own lives again. And yeah. So that whole verse in the Bible that I think we misunderstand is, our role is to encourage each other onto loving good deeds, not convict.
Yes. Yes.
And that's part of the big problem we're seeing in parenting and why kids are getting so negative, is we're trying to play the role of the Holy Spirit in our kids' lives, and we're bringing that conviction regularly. And what it's doing is causing them to get more and more negative about themselves, which leads to the depression.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's a great segue, Jeff, into a discussion of we want our kids to change, but we think that the vehicle toward change is compliance. So my parents' generation, it was all about, listen, just do as you're told. Mm-hmm. And there was no attempt at all to sit down and have conversations with their children when things clearly were not right, that relationships were strained or worse. That's how I was raised, reared, and that's how I reared my children.
Right.
Compliance.
Yep.
Now there were many sit down conversations trying to express my viewpoints and why and hearing them, but I have to tell you, Jeff, there was not really an understanding that what is really needed here is change, and that has to be something that the child generates within. So could you talk about that, the difference between compliance and versus change?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I was a parent like you. I was about rules and consequences and gaining compliance. And God blessed me with my firstborn being very, very intelligent, was reading fluently by 16 months.
Wow.
And so the problem with that is you couldn't skip a single word in the book if you were tired, you know, because and so, you know, the reality was I was a compliance parent, and by age 8 or 9, she stopped complying because she was so intelligent. And we see this a lot with really intelligent kids. They won't stick with that system. And so she became hard. She became defensive. She would argue. She'd blame the sun, the dog, the wind, the moon, anything to not be wrong, because she was trying to avoid the consequence. Okay. And so she started to lie and hide things. And I just ramped things up, and it got worse and worse. And that's part of what motivated me to go out and start talking to kids, because I was doing everything I was reading from all these parenting experts, and things were getting worse. Okay. Yeah. And what I want to point out there is, you know, we look to psychologists to be parenting experts. But if you go look at what they study almost nothing on parenting and very little on kids. It's all about the brain and function. And it's why I went out and did the research. And so I was trying to get compliance. And as I did the research, I was convicted specifically by a story of two girls that had grown up in the same town, the same Christian schools, and the same church their whole life in Renton, Washington at Highlands Community Church. And the first one was amazing and put together and knew where she was going and why. And she was a high school senior and she knew where she was going to college and she wanted to engage people around the existence of God. And she was the most amazing student I still think I've talked to in all this research. And the next girl, I said, I didn't do the warm-up questions. I just said, so where are you going to college? And she said, I don't know if I can handle college right now. And I said, how come? Well, first I literally slipped my loafer off my foot and stuck it in my mouth and said, I stuck my mouth, my foot in my mouth on that one and got her to laugh. And I said, what's going on? She started to try and tell me and she shut down. And I'm like, would it help if I turn off the camera and send the camera guy and the sound guy out of the room? She's like, yeah. So she gets out of the room, the camera's off. And she goes, my parents love me, but they're really controlling and they don't let me do anything. And I worked with my friends in the Christian school and church to get around their rules and restrictions. I got to the parties. I've been drinking. I've had sex. I've tried drugs. I've been hurt. I'm feeling so guilty and ashamed. I'm cutting.
Wow.
And I'm like, and so I went and got Lindsay back on camera, the first girl. And I said, tell me about your parents. He goes, my parents are amazing. And I'm like, how often did I hear that from a teenager in research?
Yeah.
1 in 50, 1 in 60. Okay. I said, what do you mean? We trust each other. They believe in me. They empower me. We talk about everything. She's not afraid of her parents at all. This other girl, I literally said, I will go with you to your parents and defend you. You've got to have an adult in your life, Sarah, that knows this stuff. And she is so afraid of their consequences and that she'd never have a social life again. She wouldn't go to her parents. So I went to the youth pastor and I said, let's go to youth. Oh no, it'll leak in the church and I'll be the black sheep. And I said, there's gotta be someone at your Christian high school, a teacher or a counselor that you've known for 4 years that you can talk. Oh no, if they find out, I won't be allowed to graduate because I broke the rules and you get removed and you can't even graduate. So she couldn't walk in the light with anyone. She was afraid of every group around her. And here's Lindsay saying, I talk with my parents about everything. I'm not afraid of them. They trust me. Believe me, they empower me. I'm like, what do you mean by empower? And they let me go to the, this is going to sound crazy, parents. Okay. This is going to sound literally crazy. They let me go to the football games by myself. They let me go to the parties. I'm like, well, these are Christian parties. They don't get a, oh no, Christian school parties are really bad. And I'm like, is there alcohol there? Oh yeah, alcohol and worse. And I'm like, and you go to these? And I'm like, my brain is melting. And I looked at her and I said, so do you drink? And she goes, no. And I said, have you tried drugs? No. Have you had sex? No. And I'm like, okay, my mind is melting right now. I said to her, it's on the floor. And you know, and I got closer to her like this, and I looked her right in the eyes, and I said, are you a virgin? And she didn't look away. She didn't blink. She's like, yeah, she was.
Wow.
And I'm like, why didn't you fall into this mess? She goes, because I went with my parents' confidence, belief. They drove me to the first party. All these other kids were, the rules were, and all the controls were in place to not, you know, the tracking stuff on their phones and everything to not get to these parties by their parents. And so when they got there, they were beating perceived oppression and they felt like they just had to dive in and go hog wild. And so change versus compliance, what I'm talking about here is we can punish our kids. We can come down on them. We can make them afraid of us and we can gain compliance with a significant percentage of personality types. But there's a certain percentage, like my oldest, that it doesn't work with. Okay, at all. And what we found when I began to change things with my daughter and I started to lead like Jesus and I started to create safety for her to talk about the ways I had hurt her.
Yes.
And I listened and I apologized that her desire to connect to me returned like that. And she started to chase me around the lake like Jesus had 5,000 chasing him around the lake. And I had more influence in her life and all my kids' lives than all the other parents around me with all the control combined. And what happened is she drew close to me. You know, it blows me away. At age 9, I can't talk to her about anything. She's defensive. She's argumentative. It's horrible. By age 11, I'm doing my first sermon from my seminary degree in my first sermon while in seminary was assigned to a church of 2,000. It wasn't 200.
Oh, wow.
And I am literally practicing the night before the sermon with the projector up on the wall, and I'm trying to get it to end on time, and it's too long and it's too short, and everything's on time in this church, you know, and I'm just stressed out of my mind. And upstairs above me in the bathroom, this ruckus breaks out, and they're screaming and crying and three kids going at it. And I'm like, everything in me just wanted to scream, shut up, you know, to them. And I'm like, God tapped me on the shoulder. You're talking about shepherding kids tomorrow. Oh. So I walk up the stairs, and there's soap and water all over the bathroom, and Paul's gotten in his eyes, and he's crying and screaming. The girls are screaming at him. And I walk in, get soap out of his eyes, take a towel, clean up the counter and the front of the cabinets, and everything goes deathly silent because I haven't said a word. And then I get a different towel, I clean up the floor, and I turn around and I just walk out of the room. And I walk downstairs, and I'm resetting everything to start another run, the stopwatch and everything, right? And my daughter, at 11 now, just 2 years later, walks down the stairs behind me and goes, Dad, I think I set a bad example for Paul.
Oh, wow.
And I said, really? And I sat down and said, let's sit down on the sofa. We sat down on the sofa in the living room where I was practicing. I said, how did you set a bad example for Paul? Well, we went and washed our horses, and we didn't use soap. Still some fear left over from the old parent, okay? And then she goes, and we finished, and then Paul wanted to wash his horses, and then he went in there, and he made that mess and got all that soap, and it was all over the place. And we walked in, and, you know, I got upset with him, and then he yelled back, and then he touched his face in dismay and got the soap in his eyes, and we were screaming at each other, and I'm like, you know, Heather, I don't think you did anything wrong. She goes, really? I said, well, you know, in fact, I think you could do me a favor. And she's like, what? I said, you know, next time Paul wants to wash his horses, could you teach him how to do it without using all that soap and making a huge mess all over the bathroom? She goes, really? I'm like, yeah. And I said, you know, I think there's something else that you might want to think about, because I think you responded to Paul the way we used to respond to you when you made mistakes, and you didn't like it, and it didn't go well. And now it's different, right? Our relationship is very different. And she goes, yeah. I said, you know, don't you want a better relationship with your brother? And she goes, yeah. I said, I think you need to stop doing what we used to do with you, with him, and consider doing what we're doing now. And she's like, Dad, I'll do that. And she walks upstairs.
Wow.
And their relationship got so much better. So what I'm talking about is inside out change that comes from their desires, because they desire to be successful. They desire to be close to us. They desire to please us. They're hardwired that way from birth. And if we can pull on those desires and grow their desires to do the right thing because they love us and they're close and connected to us, it's so much more powerful than coming down on them.
Yes, amen. Folks, I am speaking with author Jeff Schott. The book, What's Really Causing My Kids Bad Behavior? Thank you, producer. This is a very intriguing conversation. It's making me relive a bunch of things, I can tell you that.
Probably doing that with other parents too. Please don't feel guilty. That is not my goal.
No.
It's not the goal. So.
Understood. So, In the course of coming to understand that change is what you're after, change, helping your children to understand what's going on emotionally in them, how that is related to the way they respond, at what point in this process, Jeff, would you say that a light bulb comes on for the parent and they understand, you know, maybe I've not been asking the right questions. Maybe I need to change and begin to look at it this way. And then I'll get the responses that's going to help this relationship.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things we've got to battle as parents, and it was my battle as I did the research, and I wanted to argue with the kids at first because I'm right. I have more knowledge and wisdom, right? The true battle is with fear. We are deathly afraid as parents today what's going to go wrong in our kids' lives. And we believe it's 200, 300% more dangerous today for kids than when I grew up. But if you look at the DOJ statistics from the 70s and the early 80s when I grew up, okay, the truth is it's 30% safer today for kids than it was back then.
No kidding.
Really. And that's because the good old boy network is gone. That's because news media covers the stories with kids. They didn't cover stories with kids back then. They wouldn't even say the word pregnant on air because people would turn off their TVs. Mm. And so as a result, cracking down on sex traffickers and people that do rape and the consequences they get when they go into prison, things aren't covered up anymore like they used to be. Mm. And so there's just less crime towards kids today than there was in the 70s. And that's when I was allowed to ride my bike across Palatine, Illinois by myself to the mall with money that I made from cutting lawns. And I would buy Morgan silver dollars for $70 and drive back. It was not safe. It was 30% less safe then. And today we're like, we got to have tracking things on our phones. We're trying to micromanage our kids. College presidents is one of the top things they're talking about is how to get parents to disengage from their college students and not micromanage them with technology. And so, you know, the reality is what we've got to understand is when we have a trust relationship with our kids, because trust is the bedrock of love, they rise to that trust. When we doubt them and we question them and we tell them no because it's not safe, they don't feel believed in and trusted. And that breaks the relationship and it creates a void in here that they have to fill with something else. And they fill it with social media. They fill it with video gaming. They fill it with unhealthy friends. And we found that we were unwittingly giving the influence away in our kids' lives. And I think one of the main things parents need to realize is when our kids have the same issue over and over again, and we've talked about it, and they can't overcome it, it's probably coming from unconscious stuff because only 5% of thoughts and emotions are conscious. 95% are unconscious. And so if our kids are struggling with something over and over again and we ratchet up and it doesn't change and they just get hurt and pull away from us, are we helping or harming? And what we need to do is get great at digging in and helping them understand, what are you feeling right now? What's going on? You know, you just made this decision. You've made this decision 5 or 6 times. It's always caused you pain. What's going on in there right before you make that decision? And we talk about their feelings and we drag those feelings out and they're uncomfortable at first talking about it with us because they don't feel safe with us. We've got to rebuild that. But the reality is, as you do that, all of a sudden something will crystallize and they'll go, wow, you know, my friend did this and it was really painful. And so, yeah, I came back and I didn't do my homework and I just escaped in video games the rest of the night. And you get them talking about that pain and that hurt and you encourage them to grieve, which is psychologically proven to be healthy. And by the way, the Bible uses the word grief 67 times and mourning more than that. And Israel, in spite of all the hostility around them, they have much stronger mental health than us because they teach their kids to grieve. They have the wailing wall. And we help our kids vent those feelings. And all of a sudden, they get healthier and they're more resilient. And the next time a friend says something, they know what to do with it and they don't end up going escaping into the video games.
Yeah.
So this unconscious conscious challenge is where parents, what I'm trying to do with our One Rule Home program and Leading with Love cohort is train parents to be the people that can dig in with their kids. They don't need to send them to a counselor.
Yes.
75% of the parents that go through that actually see radical change in their kids without the need of a counselor.
Wow. I don't know why anybody wouldn't sign up for that.
It's so much fun. I mean, we just had this mom who had an 8-year-old and a 6-year-old. She's got a 3-year-old and an infant, and she's in there. She's in that class. And I love it because she didn't wait until the problems in the teenage years. Her son was having anger issues at school and at home. And literally 6 weeks into this class, this cohort where there's an online component you do, and then there's an hour and a half with us as coaches. And she had literally changed things with everything she was doing with her son. And actually it's closer to 8 weeks, sorry, because we went through the Christmas break. And after Christmas comes a field trip in the new semester, and the son looks on the list and he's not on the list, because if you got 5 red cards, you could no longer go on field trips ever again. That was the policy of the school. And so the mom reached out to the teacher, and the teacher said, well, let's meet after school. And she's like, oh, this is going to be bad news, because he had had more than 5 red cards. And they got there, and the teacher sat down and said, you know what? We have seen so much change in you and your behavior at school that I've talked with the principal and the counselor at the school, and we've decided, in spite of the policy, we're going to let you go on this field trip.
Wow.
8 weeks. 8 weeks, this kid went from terror problem at school and at home to the school seeing so much change, they let him go on the field trip.
That's amazing. That is simply amazing. One of the statements that you made, and then you talked about it in the book, that made me raise my eyebrows when I read it, is that very little of the behavior that we witness in our children that make us want to react or respond, very little of that is actually intentional. Please explain that.
Yeah. We see it as intentional. From the research we did with 3,000 kids, most of the time there was 1 of 5 or 6 things going on that was going on underneath that caused them to respond defensively. My daughter was very defensive and would lie to me to avoid the consequences, right? That's what was motivating her. I had actually trained her to lie inadvertently, which is what I found in the research, is if you're going to lose your phone, just think about it, parents. If you're an adult and someone was going to come into your life and take your phone with all your contacts and all your business contacts, if you failed, would you tell that person that you failed, or would you lie about it?
Good point.
You'd lie about it. I'd lie about it. I can't live without this thing. This runs all my clients. This runs my life, right? It's running theirs too. And so, you know, the 5 things that we see driving kids' behavior below it is that compliance and the fear it creates of our consequences breaks down the relationship and leads to unresolved issues from the kid's side. We resolve it. We get the apology from them, but they never really get heard of how we're treating them, how they feel in the relationship. We're not apologizing to them. And so they've got unresolved issues. Let me ask, the last time you had conflict in your marriage and things weren't good, when your spouse came and said, would you take out the garbage, and you were doing an email, did you jump up right away and do it? Or was it like fingernails on the chalkboard to you? And so when there's unresolved issues in the relationship, our kids' desire to please us and to do what we ask them drops. That's one of the things. The unconscious to conscious, if our kids have something unconscious driving the behavior and they're trying to change it, and this is what we found in the research, is I tried to change it so many times and I prayed and God didn't answer my prayers, and I wonder if God's even real anymore. And my parents just kept coming down on me. Someone help me. I don't know what's going on. That broke the relationship and the desire to please and to serve. Fight or flight is something huge we've seen since COVID. We lived in fear for so long, and they couldn't go to school and everything else, that the body, if it lives in fear too long, loses the ability to regulate. And so you go into fight or flight a lot easier, a lot more quickly. I know this, unfortunately, because I was a victim of domestic violence in my marriage. And I literally, by the end of everything, lost my ability to regulate. And I was with a trauma therapist with Alternative Horizons. And she spent 3 months just retraining my body through somatic exercises to regulate. So if your kid's popping off and reacts, I had this one girl, you know, who literally was sitting in a chair in a session, and a thump happened behind us that wasn't very loud. And we have this pile of blankets and stuffed animals for kids when they're talking about hard stuff to to you know, kind of cover themselves up in and feel safe. And she dove off the chair head first into that pile, like a soldier diving into a foxhole. Wow. From a thump, because she was heavily in fight or flight. And we're seeing a ton of this since COVID. Stored trauma. So if your kid was in a car accident, or if your kid was left accidentally, I did it with one of my girls once in a store, right? It creates trauma in our little kids because they're so emotional and so sensitive. And it gets stored in the amygdala. And even if they block the memory, the trauma is still there, and it's got a calendar in it. And it loosely marks the advent of that trauma. So if your kid has a bad time of year every year, probably coming from back here. Or if they have triggers, like I had a woman who came to me all embarrassed. She goes, I don't know what causes it, but like two or three times a year, it can be with the city manager or the motor pool manager or my husband, or it can be with a woman. It doesn't matter. It was with a coworker once. They do something and it's nothing bad. And I literally get deathly afraid and lose bladder control. She was triggering. We've tracked it back to a facial expression and a tone of voice from her mom when she was little. And if someone, a man or a woman, hit a similar facial expression and a tone of voice, it triggered that from her childhood and led to this fight or flight response. And so we took her through understanding that wound, the effects of it. We took her through the somatic stuff and things you can do to release the stored trauma. And boom, it's never happened again. It's 10 years later now.
Yeah. Wow.
And then the unresolved issues. It's just, we don't often develop a bi-directional resolution process with our kids. Mm-hmm. We get handed a baby that requires 100% control and 100% one-way communication. And it only takes 21 days to create a habit. And then that habit just continues. And we see parents with teenagers still doing that one-way communication. I have the answers. You do what I say. And the kids are like, you know, Mary was 13 or 14 when she had Jesus. She was considered an adult. And she handled it very maturely. George Washington was 16 when he was an official land surveyor for the U.S. government. John Adams was 13 years old when he was the secretary to the then equivalent of the ambassador to Russia and would travel to Russia by himself representing the U.S. government at age 13 and 14.
Amazing.
Our kids are so much more capable, but our fear of what can go wrong in their lives has led us to take away responsibility, not trust them, try and control them, try and monitor everything they do. And kids are frustrated out of their mind. They don't feel trusted. They don't feel loved. In fact, there was this national study on love that concluded what causes people to feel loved and what causes them not to feel loved. I think it was done by Penn State. And the most unloving thing in our culture in the U.S., according to all the surveys they did, was control. That was the most unloving thing people felt.
Wow.
And so I get the fear. I get all these news stories that make things that happen in the Fiji Islands sound like it happened next door. But it's 30% safer today. And we've got to get rid of the fear, because God says, fear nothing here, revere him. When fear drives our parenting, it leads to depression, anxiety. It leads to cutting. It leads to escapism into social media and video games. It leads to all of these things. And, you know, when we start to lead like Jesus, when we handle issues in our kids' lives like Jesus handled issues, and the people he met, like the woman at the well and the rich young man and the adulterous woman, our kids glom onto us. And my kids literally call me their best friend. And I have more influence in their lives than anyone, because I have treated them better and more loving and with more grace and with more discipleship, training and teaching than they've gotten from anybody else. I've been more consistent. I've been more safe than any of their friends, than any of their teachers. And so they buy me more than the world. And when your kids buy you more than the world, you don't have to fear the world anymore, because they're saying, I buy you more than the teachers. I buy you more than my friends. And they follow you because they want to, not because they have to or else.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's easy to understand then why you mentioned in your book that our battle as parents is often more with ourselves than it is with our children.
You know, when I did the research and I wanted to argue with the kids, and then I started to be forced to listen, and then I started to go back to the Bible and look at how Jesus led, it was convicting. It was hard. I had to wrestle with my lack of faith that God could protect my kids. I had to wrestle with my lack of belief that the Holy Spirit would convict my kids instead of me. I had to wrestle with my desire to control. And some of that came from my past. Some of it was stuff I had to dig into unconsciously, some of my core beliefs, and address those. And we've helped parents that, you know, want to change, and they've got anger issues with their kids. And some of them come to us when they're abusing their kids. And no, we don't follow all those laws. Because if they want help and they want to deal with the demons that are in here, that are causing the explosions that make them mad at themselves, and they say they're never going to do it again, and they pray like mad, like my ex-wife did with her anger and abuse issues, and I was a victim of domestic violence. I remember one year where she broke down crying, and she goes, I've prayed, and God hasn't answered my prayers. I can't get rid of my anger. And I didn't understand all this back then. I couldn't help her. And unfortunately, the counselor she went through didn't help either. And she quit counseling, will never go back again. And so the reality is there is hope. And there is a way for inner healing to happen in you and in your kid. And for so many kids, we've found if the parent moves and changes, kids are more resilient. Their systems are more resilient. They're not as stuck as adults get. They haven't stuffed as much emotion or as much hurt. And so they can reset oftentimes without counseling. But if you're a parent that's struggling, please get on our site. There's a schedule a call button in the upper right-hand corner of the One Rule Home site. We'll talk to you. I'll share my story. I'll be transparent with you. We'll talk about how we can help you be the things that you want to be so you can be Jesus with your kids. We all love our kids. None of us set out to hurt them. I know I didn't set out to hurt mine. I did, because I was a really good rules and consequences parent at one point, you know. But the reality is that's not Jesus with us. Could you imagine if every time we thought had a wrong thought or we did something wrong, Jesus came down on us and issued a consequence? Would we chase him around the lake? Would we even attend church, or would we be running and hiding like no tomorrow, you know?
Yes.
So let's be Jesus to our kids.
Yeah. Amen. Amen, Jeff. You mentioned core beliefs earlier, and the negative core beliefs that are so common to a lot of folks, not just children, but adults as well. But with children, there's still time to rebuild those negative core beliefs. What would you recommend for parents who, they're tracking with everything you're saying, the light bulb has come on, they understand now they need to change themselves and the way that they relate to their children. How would they go about then taking these next steps in addressing some of those core beliefs?
Let me explain core beliefs a little more. Core beliefs are set by age 6, right? And it's hard to believe, and I didn't believe that. And they're deeply held, often at an unconscious level in the basement of the brain. And they're things like, I'm not good enough, or I have to be perfect, or I'm unlovable, or I'm ugly, okay? And I had a hard time believing the psychological research on this until I had a family come out with 5 kids, and they had everything from a 12-year-old down to a 3-year-old or a 2-year-old at that point. And their 5-year-old wanted to do what the older kids were doing. And I'm like, you're too young. But I had her 8-year-old brother sit down and go through the pain worksheet with her and explain the different words that she didn't understand. And then I sat down with her after he did the whole sheet with her. And I'm like, this pain word tell me what caused you to feel that? And she could give me an answer. She knew every answer better than adults because we stuffed so much. And then we got to the core beliefs thing, and we're asking the family to wrestle with what they really believe deep inside and get into their unconscious, all the stuff they really don't want to admit they believe about themselves. And she was the first one done with her list. And it was, I'm stupid. I'm not good enough. No one will care for me. I'm unlovable. At age 5, she spit those out like rapid fire, because she hadn't learned stuff and all of that that we adults have mastered in our culture. And it took her parents, 2 days to get their list together. She was done in 7 minutes, and it brought the parents to tears. And so what's a clue of a core belief? When you hear your kids things spill out of their mouth that's negative about themselves. I can't do anything right. I'm stupid. I'm ugly. What do we believe we need to do? We say things like, you're not ugly, you're pretty. Well, what we've found from the research is when we say that, the kids are like, my parents never believe me. They don't listen to me. They don't validate anything I think or feel. They don't feel listened to. They don't feel heard. And so a lot of them have a core belief of no one will listen to me. We're shocked at how often we see that with kids. Yeah. And so what do we need to do? It's like what I did with my daughter. She was saying she was stupid. She came home one day from middle school, the first year of middle school, just down. And I don't want to go to school anymore. I can't do it. I'm stupid, Dad. And I looked at her, I said, okay, Jennifer, why do you feel stupid? And she listed all these reasons. And I said, okay, I can see that. And, I'm dyslexic and you're dyslexic. And unfortunately, I gave up on school and I didn't figure it out until college. And then I graduated magna cum laude. But the reality is I gave up. And I need to apologize to you. And she's like, what? You're dyslexic. It's genetic. I gave it to you. It's my fault. It's not your fault. And she broke down in tears.
Wow.
And I said, and I can see you want to give up, but I wish I hadn't, because I could have figured it out sooner. And you just need to figure it out. And so is there any evidence that says you are smart that you can think of? And she gave one or two things. And then I asked for permission. Can I share a few things that tell me that you're actually very smart? And she said, yeah, because I'd listened to all the negative and gotten it out of the way. And I'd validated her feelings and encouraged her. Now she was open to hearing me say some positive, and she could actually take it in. Because negative core beliefs, what they do is when something positive comes at a kid with negative core beliefs, it's not consistent with what they believe about themselves in the basement of their mind. So they reject it, or they minimize it, or they dismiss it. So if you say positive things to your kids and they bounce off and you see it, it's because of the core beliefs. But I got her to open up through doing that. And then I shared some of those positive things. And she's like, I'm like, are those true? And she goes, yeah, but I still feel like I'm just so stupid and so unable to do school. And I said, I get it. How can I help you? What do you want me to do to help you figure it out now? And so you don't have to wait till college and encounter even more bad grades and more bad grades until you really believe you're stupid, And she's like, I want a tutor, Dad. And so she asked for the tutor. I didn't send her. And so she goes to the tutor, and the tutor calls us after 12 weeks. And she goes, your daughter is the most amazing kid. She works harder than all my other kids combined. If all my kids would work this hard in tutoring, they would all do great. And at the end of that semester, my daughter made the principal's list. Wow. That's bringing tears to me. And the school called me and said, we've never seen a kid that was this far behind catch up at all, let alone catch up in 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
What did you do? And I told the story to the person that called. She said, would you come in and talk to all the school counselors? And I went in and told the story to all the school counselors. and they were going out talking to parents. Okay. There's just a different way to do this, to go after the roots that are underneath the bad behavior. We've been trained to go after the green part of the weed. What happens when you cut off the top of the weed in your yard?
Mm-hmm.
It grows back.
Yeah.
And the root systems double in size almost every time because they got to get enough nutrients to get leaves again quickly to get photosynthesis going again so it doesn't die.
So
what we're asking parents to do is become heart surgeons, and we'll train you to do it. To dive in here and get to the roots of the stuff that's leading to the bad behavior.
Yes.
We can be the discipler. We can be the teacher. We can be the counselor for our kids.
Yes.
But we got to start approaching things like Jesus as opposed to like the Old Testament. The Old Testament was laws and sacrifices, rules and consequences. It led to a mess. It led to a silence of the prophets for 300 years. It didn't work. Somehow, we've gotten grace for ourselves, but we're still parenting out of the Old Testament, and it's having the same effects, whitewashed tombs in our kids. It's why so many are leaving the faith from our research, too. And I've got a book coming out on that in a few months called I'm Checking Out on My Parents in the Faith that goes into all of that research related to why they're leaving the faith. And I'd ask parents to get on our site, onerulehome.com. Right on there, there's two buttons, start the CCI, which is the Child Concern Index. But next to it is download the book. We will let you download what's really causing my kids bad behavior for free today. Go to onerulehome.com and start challenging yourself. Start wrestling with what's going on deep inside my kid that's causing the bad behavior. And this book will help you do that. And then from there, if you're like, whoa, I need to make some changes, get my next book called The One Rule Home. It's already out. Also available on Amazon in all three formats. And find a way to give yourself some peace. I mean, parenting this way seems really hard at first. It is so much easier in the long run. When your kids want to listen to you and want to follow you and they look up to you, and they talk to you about everything, it's so much easier.
Yes.
It's hard in the transition, but it's so worth it.
Yes. Amen. Jeff, this conversation, for sure, the book has given a lot of hope to parents that find themselves in fractured relationships and don't know where to turn. This is a good place to start, folks. What's really causing my kids bad behavior? It's really an eye opener. And listen, you can sit down and read it. If you're an average reader, you can sit down and read it in 2 hours. You'll want to take some notes. You'll be underlining things. There'll be some aha moments in there. And especially if you're my age, you're going to say, wow, that it's going to resonate with you. But, the thing that's valuable is that you give hope, Jeff. And so I really appreciate you writing the book, taking the time to join us here on WCN-TV. And folks, please go out to One Rule Home. Download this book for free. They're giving it to you for free. Take the CCI questionnaire and start the journey towards reestablishing a relationship with your children. Jeff, God bless you, brother. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Mike, thanks so much for having me on and let me share all these stories, because we love our kids and we don't want to lose them.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Well, folks, that's all we've got for you today. Please share this show with your circle of friends. Tell them to go to the archive and watch it. Post it on your platforms as well. We appreciate that very much. Rob will be with you next week. God bless you all. We'll see you next time. Thank you.